This is Melting Titanium number 38, recorded on December 29th, copyright 2009, New Grand View Incorporated, all rights reserved, and we're starting at 6:01 p.m. Hawaii time. And here we go.
Good evening. Welcome all those who want all the news that is news across the ESP nation. We start off with our Highway to Hell and Stairway to Heaven while everything's coming up roses, waiting on the last ticket to be sold to the boat that goes to the last resort.
You got
welcome
it.
One, welcome all. If you're feeling something funny in your belly, don't worry, it'll get worse. It's all right. Don't fret about it. Go with it. See how it flows. How you feeling? How you feeling? How you feeling? Not how are you feeling, how you feeling. That's the way to change the sentence around to make it apply. Then we have our hostess with the mostest, Uncle Billy Bob, and Dame Connie.
And I suggest we begin with Sylvia Brown's predictions for 2010.
All right,
she says, around 2009 to 2010, I predict Americans will start working what I like to call our butts in quotes. There are problems that we are aware of that make the global community smaller. We have liked to say our system works, but, and then it says the buts are, children are not properly fed, clothed, educated, protected, or given adequate medical care. Many in our population do not have a place to call home. Some of our youth get more attention from gangs and drug dealers than they do positive role models. People who are ready, willing, and able to work cannot find decent jobs. Our elderly are not cared for properly, either financially or medically. Some death row inmates are innocent.
That's a blessing.
Some elected officials and large corporations do not think of the welfare of the people as a high priority. They'd rather just increase their bank accounts.
That's manifestation.
Okay, I predict we'll develop strong resolve and resources to address these problems. That'd be fascism, right? And come up with some good solutions. Now, here's what she predicts. I predict a great rise in skin cancer in children until 2010. There's a lot of media coverage about the UV rays and many products to protect people against them, but people are still often careless when it comes to the sun. Then again, people could pay attention and reverse this prediction right out from under me. I would certainly be all for that. I predict the president elected sometime between 2008 and 2020 will die in office from a heart attack. The vice president who will finish their term will have an unpopular, will finish the other guy's term, will have an unpopular and mistaken intention to declare war on North Korea. By that time, North Korea will have weapons of mass destruction.
They already do.
In the middle of efforts to declare war, I predict the vice president will be assassinated.
Damn.
There will be a worldwide investigation into the vice president's death with both pleasant and unpleasant surprises. A lot of attention will be paid to one of the investigative congressional committees and serious accusations will be made regarding missing funds.
Is that the TARP money?
Yeah. Yeah, come on now, it's finished. A lot of predictions here.
I'm non-physical in the process of slipping a stitch. It's okay, go ahead. Okay, good.
Finally, it will be revealed that their accusations are part of a conspiracy to damage the American people's faith in their government, with the media manipulated to fan the flames, and the committee will be vindicated in the end. I predict we can truly say goodbye to the common cold in 2009 or 2010. The solution to the common cold involves heat. Keep in mind that the body's first response when we develop a cold is to come down with a fever. Many doctors today no longer rush to push patients to take temperature-reducing medications when they come down with a fever, unless the fever is dangerous.
Well, is it or isn't it? Make up your mind.
They feel the immune system is the patient's best medicine and should be given a chance to fight back. So as the immune system fights a cold with heat, the cure for the common cold certainly may lie in this first signal to heal.
So that means that the only thing left is antiretrovirals? Is that what they're trying to stimulate?
I find it hard to make. Keep in mind the body's first response when we develop a cold is coming down with fever. Many doctors today no longer rush to push patients to take temperature, reducing medications when they come down with a fever. I don't know, you reduce medications that they're already on?
She's referring to, like, acetaminophen or birch bark, which is aspirin, or...
Oh, temperature-reducing medications. She should have that hyphenated. Yeah. Temperature-reducing medications.
That's what she's trying to say, yeah.
No longer try, rush to push to take unless the fever is dangerous. They feel the immune system is the patient's best medicine, should be given a chance to fight back. So as the immune system fights the cold with heat, the cure for the common cold certainly may lie in this first signal to heal. Well, so she's saying that it's good they don't do these medications.
They do. That's how they start every treatment. That's how they start every checkup. That's how they start every baseline of what consistency is when people's temperatures aren't the same. Some people run 96, some people run 99. There is no medium standard. 98.6 is just the most average. It's not the core body temperature.
Well, she's just saying they're not going to give them medications.
Well, they don't give them medications anyway. If someone has a fever, you're supposed to take an aspirin. Call them in the morning.
She says many doctors today no longer rush to push patients to take temperature-reducing medications.
But they don't do that. They do that on their own. You don't go to the doctor if you have a cold.
So I don't know what she means. I don't know what you mean.
Don't. Well, Bob, you had the sniffles. Did you go to the doctor?
No.
Okay. Did they push drugs to tell you to take an aspirin to reduce your temperature?
I didn't go to the doctor, so do they push drugs?
Okay. Did you have a fever with your cold?
Not much.
No, rarely do you have the rhinovirus. Rarely induces a raging fever.
Well, she's saying the solution to the common cold involves heat. Do you agree with that?
No.
What is she trying to say?
We have no idea.
Fight a cold with heat.
No, it's starve a cold, feed a fever. Wait. Cold and fever apparently are two different things.
So you're not sure what she means?
You don't eradicate a rhinovirus with a fever. It's a virus.
Right.
It would be like no longer are doctors cutting out ingrown toenails if you run a fever. That's a sentence, and it's radical, but it's the case, and they're also big proponents of that. But they have very little or nothing to do with each other. Now, if you're talking flu symptoms, doctors are saying for little ones, don't give them acetaminophen because it causes an obstruction with the body's process of working or letting its natural flow of its immune system pump up to increase your core temperature to inhibit the reproduction of these viral loads of different flu-like symptoms. That's okay, but then they say, don't let it get too high. Well, now what's too high? They don't even know what the basis is, so how are they going to say that 102.5 is too high? Oh, 108, you have brain damage. Not everyone. Yikes. Wait a minute. How does this work? Isn't that what your H1N1 was all about? You spike this fever that won't go down no matter what you do? That seems to be the answer, if what she's saying is true. But yet, the fever seems to be what the issue was that was causing this pandemic of the moment that you're just now recouping over, since you've already spent billions on shell stockpiles of immunizations that you paid for. That's borrowed from Dr. Dean.
Next prediction. I predict that a small cubicle will become available in doctors' offices sometime in 2009, and it will be heated to a very precise temperature. There may be a special vapor placed into the cubicle. Patients will stand in the cubicle for approximately 5 minutes, and the rhinitis germ will be destroyed. The rhinitis, is that what, that's the cold term?
Well, rhinovirus, rhinitis is a derivative of that. And that's in 2009, so you have, what, 3 days left for that?
Yeah.
Okay, they better hurry.
All right, so aside from that, would you agree with this temperature treatment?
As much as going and laying out in the sunshine. Wait, that gives you skin cancer. Don't do that. Oh, wait. Okay. Okay. Yes, no, yes, no. Please yourself. Yeah, forget it. Do it all. Do none of it. It's all good. How about relax and allow? We like that one really good.
Then she continues on this point. Another wonderful bit of good news on the health front with this discovery. Since this cubicle can easily take on the rhinitis germ, many people that have breathing problems with allergies and asthma complications will find some breakthroughs as well. We will see this cubicle discovery used for healing for those with breathing disorders. The cubicle will become available in 2009 or 2010.
They call that an oxygen tent, don't they, Bob?
That's right.
Okay.
She says, her final statement, I predict hypnotic past life regression will become available through a group of trained psychologists on both the East and West Coast of the USA in 2009. It will prove to be quite a success and will be widely practiced by 2011.
Well, you have to acknowledge that you've had more than one life. If you agree that you've had more than one life, how many lives have you had? Well, that goes back into your timing issue. Did you have enough time to have more than one life? When did your life begin? When will it end? Well, if you knew that from your past regressions of your regressed past presence, then you should be able to know when your life will end and live your life accordingly, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you can't figure that out, then who said your life has to end, your life force has to end? Well, it doesn't. So how are you to come to a past, present, past, blue, perfect tense of the past tense of the present verbiage of now that is your experience or being from your past, present, future experience? Sounds a little cheeky, doesn't it?
That seems to be her predictions. That's about it. Now, someone comments on her blog or whatever it is, regarding Sylvia Brown's prophetic insight, why didn't Ms. Brown predict the recent terrorist attempt aboard the airliner that was leaving Nigeria to Detroit? Luckily, the crazed Nigerian militant Muslims' attempt was thwarted, and the airliner that went down last year and landed in the water, okay, guess, and she's mentioning another one, why didn't she pick up on the airliner that went down last year and landed in the water that the heroic pilot was able to navigate with precision, saving the lives of everybody aboard? How about the rash of teen suicides that occurred in the California Bay Area, where these young people jumped in front of a computer, in front of commuter trains?
While they were computing on their tweeters, or tweaking on their computers, which is it?
That's it. Also, we can predict upon our lame, generalized assumptions and her cretinous predictions regarding Hollywood individuals like Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie divorcing. How hard is it to predict Brad Pitt's relationships failing? And Ms. Brown saying that she thinks, quote, Obama's doing a good job, unquote. What plan is she on? Come on, Sylvie Brown, why not come clean and admit that you don't possess any greater psychic ability than any other Tom, Dick, or Mary? For the fact that Sylvia Brown was convicted of a felony in 1992, along with her husband, Dow, in a fake gold scheme investment where Sylvia and Dow pleaded no contest to the charges. According to arithmetic, scholarly studies, out of thousands of people tested annually that claim to be psychic, 99% are deemed to be frauds. Only a very tiny percentage of individuals tested actually have a proven psychic ability. There's a great deal of evidence to support true claims of the paranormal, but for the fact that Sylvia refuses to be tested to authenticate her claims by scientific means, then there's just one more strike against her. As far as I'm concerned, she struck out.
Wow.
A second statement by someone else. I've been tracking Sylvia Brown for a while now, and I've seen her predictions fail time after time. Please look for another psychic that's at least close to real. And then he posts a website called Stop Sylvia. Okay, Ian, you can clean
enough,
this.
Enough. We love and appreciate Sylvia Brown. We absolutely find delight in her churches. She has a church. She is making herself available to the generalized public. Help Montel Williams imminently put herself in the harm's way of taking culpable responsibility for everyone else's reality that they're not willing to take on themselves. So how dare you, Mr. Blogger, Miss Blogger, use your energy and time on doing that which you do not even understand. Now, is Sylvia Brown right a lot of the times or wrong a lot of the times, and do her feet really hurt? Yes, her feet really do hurt. And that's when she went into retirement. So she's retired. So where's all this coming from? Well, she's coming books to tell you how to talk to frogs and birds and angels and spirits and Nephilim and Seraphim and pyramids and rocks and any other dynamic and thing. Well, any of that whole life's work comes into a position very painlessly and simply into a position of, if you've done half of what she's done, you'd be wrong some of the time too. So if you're judging non-physical or a spiritual gift based on what science has to say about it, well, then she must be the Messiah incarnate, letting you know that the end of days has come. So ease off, ease off. We say, ease off. Bless her. She is a marvelous creator. And if she's spoken into your life, you'll find as many people to say that she had specific insight to their individualness. It's how they embrace that reference of the gift in their own non-physical. So the 99 and 9, 99 and 9, 44 100s, that you're looking for, that you won't accept, if that Messiah came and moved into your house, you'd probably crucify him too. So we say, play with that. Enjoy that. It's very marvelous and delicious that these have come forth to activate in individual human creators their own spiritual gifts. Bless you. Bless you for recognizing and opening yourself into a place where you can have a greater beingness within your being. Because otherwise, if you spend all day, every day, chasing what science has to say about your non-physical reality, well, you're pretty well having anal intercourse right from the start there, and then grumbling because you have this strange sensation in your rectum. Well, there you go. Ease off. It's not a problem. It's not an issue. She's right. She's wrong. She's up. She's down. She's over. She's under. But then so are you. You don't even know which planet you live on, let alone directing someone with a spiritual gift into a position of their deity. The point is that if you don't take culpable responsibility for everyone's human creation, then the non-physical that's part of you can't resonate even with you, let alone other non-physical. So we say, bless Sylvia Brown in her work, in her going, and her coming. Now, do we gauge our life based on her words? No. But if you listen and very succinctly figured it out for yourself, you wouldn't need a Sylvia Brown or any other psychically minded individual imbuing your own non-physical, because you won't have it anyway. So if you spent as much time planting trees as you did cutting them down, you wouldn't notice the forest for the trees, now would you? Then your spiritual gifts could be activated from your own place. Now, we were cheekily playing from the beginning point of the new prediction. I guess that's diction. Oh, wait, that's dictation. Oh, that's typing. Oh, that's what everybody's supposed to be doing. So I guess you just keep typing, and you can untype yourself in as many corners as you paint yourself in and out of, you see. The magic of this, we do real good until you start pushing against another human creator. Because every time you do that, all you're doing is bringing up the point that you are less than. And you better be praying to yourself and asking yourself that someone like a Sylvia Brown, or pick one, it's not hard to do, pick one and start trying to find ways how it can work. You know what you can't do. We're more interested in our non-physical place that's raging and lovingly saying, come over here, 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 and then let the band play on. Come over here, come over here. Well, come over here. Stop fighting about why the world's flat. It's a battle you're not going to win. Why bother? Why get all twisted and tangled up in that foolishness that is your disconnection with you? If you could find the deliciousness that is and let them be, it would never come up into conversation. You'd be activated, and you psychically would know that Sylvia Brown wouldn't be so psychic now, wouldn't you? Well, if you're so smart, why haven't you figured this out already, Mr. Scientist, Blogger, Man? If you're that bright, you don't have to spend your time pointing out the faults of another human creator. This is where J.W.'s granddaddy was so eloquent. He said it all the days of his life. He said, "Sonny boy, I'll be so glad when I get all my shit together." And he'd always say it like he was sneezing, "My shit together." And we'd say, "Granddaddy, why is that?" He said, "Because just as soon as I get all my shit together, then I'm going to take to helping everybody else with theirs. But until then, I'm going to get mine together. You spend your energy getting your own world straightened out, then you won't have to worry about Sylvia Brown's predictions regarding yours."
Yeah, I get it all the time on my blog, you know. You make one little mention of something that bothers someone and they just get really hysterical about you being so irresponsible of mentioning their biggest bugaboo. And that's what the internet allows. It allows people to just rail on, just like Ion did, and have no concern or consideration of who they're talking to.
Exactly, or about.
Or about, or...
They don't even know what they're referencing to. The very idea, the very idea to say that someone doesn't have a position that is. You see, it's not up to them, thank goodness. If Sylvia Brown hits or misses, that's up to Sylvia Brown. She's a marvelous creator. And if you really want to have some great fun playing with her gold deal in 92, had it been left alone with gold now at $1,140 an ounce, it would have been pretty sweet. And it wouldn't have been a no-low contendra at that stage now, would it? If you want to get to the details.
So who meddled with it?
Well, who always meddles? Everybody's always into everybody else's business. It's those that file those what you call uncivil suits.
Okay, Ian, do you have some things you want to talk about?
No, you're doing good. We have enjoyed, well, no, we have suffered, well, no, we have sojourned in our little bit of respite, which is very uncommon for us. We normally flow much more fluidly all the time. And with a tiny little break, what it did was do you know what sharpening steel, do you know what that is? It's the thing that you use to really put a good honed edge on a double barrel butcher knife. Well, it's a great, great, great fun thing because it makes it super sharp. And that's what this respite has done, is giving a much more honed edge to what's known as us. So
see,
what do you want to know about?
Well, it's the end of the year, and let's see what our audience, they've been following us for a few months. We started in April. What do they have to ask for the end of the year?
Okay, very, very good. What they're wanting to know about is, as they start to do these things that their non-physical is also agreeing for them to do, and they can use our words, you can use anybody's words you want to, pick some words, type about it, and then tweet along. But the point is how they activate this in their place of knowing, not just in their place of hearing. They start activating this. What should be the original outcomes? Well, the first outcome is that you would have an inner sense of peace, real peace in your place. What you also would start noticing is that things start to work out for you. What you would also notice is the things that would send you right up a tree don't seem to be in your experience any longer. And then you start having just this agape love toward most relatively everything, to the point where you cannot have anything against even Adolf Hitler. It was great fun even with the Mel Brooks and the Kennedy Center Awards. JW was watching that, and they did a great soliloquy to Adolf Hitler. And the crowd just raged and cheered and laughed, and all they had the greatest fun. And we just kind of rolled back and go, "Well, see, they just won't seem to leave this one alone now, will they?" We thought Adolf Hitler was going to get a Kennedy Award before it was all over with and put his name on the wall. But it was a parody, of course, from Mel Brooks, obviously, which was, you know, which is a very appropriate and fun. It is fun. But even that made that just très hilaire. It was just hysterically funny. And that was done from the tongue-in-cheek part of, we go. Heil me was the meme of the rage. Instead of Heil Hitler, Hitler was saying Heil me. Singing and dancing, and I mean, it was the Fred Astaire moment, you can be sure. But that's one of the dynamics. Another dynamic is how do you take culpable responsibility for your power? That's very simple, and that's easily, objectively wrapped. Everything that's already happening in your world is your creation anyway. So if you can take your power back, then all of a sudden, if your life sucks, then you know why. Rather than being lost in this infinity loop of depression and desertion and destruction and dissension and matriculations of all kinds of maladies and distancing yourself from yourself, all of a sudden now you can take hold of that and go, wait a second. You mean if I don't choose to jump off the bridge, I don't have to jump off the bridge? Exactly. Wow, that's powerful. And then the cancer doesn't have to get you, and you don't have to go sit in a little steam box in a doctor's office to get rid of the cold. You don't have to chase the cold to catch one. You don't have to wonder what your government's going to do and who's going to divorce and who's going to sleep with who and who's going to have an ejection fracture larger than another one. And you don't even have to get crossways of all that. You don't have to worry about the world. You don't have to worry about the economy. You're creating your own world. If you spend all your time in your business worrying, working with your world, you find very little time to find fault with everyone else's. If you keep you all day, every day, enjoying the beach that is yours, you won't be bothered by the storms that destroy everyone else's. Very simple, very easy, not difficult. Not in every dimension that you can come up with, to come against that falls away, because the falling away always comes to, well, if it doesn't, then who's responsible if it doesn't work out? If your world can't work for you, whose world is going to work for you? If your world can't work for you, whose world is going to work for you? Perfect words. When did the government take possibility of opportunity of power over your own life and knowing and beingness? When did it become their job? When did you lay down and abdicate the throne? How does this work? It's very interesting to us that the human creators spend all day, every day, trying to navigate themselves out of this of whose blame and whose fault it is that this is. Well, if you could take your own responsibility for it, then you don't even have to take the energy to even consider the lilies that are growing in someone else's yard, and yet you could still enjoy them deliciously even so. Oh, it's great fun.
What comment from the audience prompted that?
Oh, just many folks of asking, you made the reference of since we began our work of putting our foot out into the, see, you speak of non-physical as just starting in April, and it's not like that at all. It's not like that at all. It's been around for very, very ever. That's your beginningness. But this beginning didn't begin. It always is. It always will be. So now, that's interesting, because see, if you could come to that dynamic, then all of a sudden, your past life regressions, there is an opportunity for those to even be engaged, because you're just in your one run through.
Which goes on forever.
There you go. Very good. Very good. We were hoping to stump you there. That was our Alex Trebek moment for the Jeopardy portion of the show. So very good, Bob. You're spot on tonight. Very, very good. Very good. But that's what that was about. How to achieve the warm, fuzzy parts of life, your life. How do you get them? How do you achieve them? How do you gain an erection? How do you go with it to completion? How do you bring that joyful experience into your world? How does everything work out for you? How does food magically show up into your world? How does bad nutrition still promote good health, wellness, well-being in your life? How does this all work? How does this all seemingly flow? How is it 1 minute over and the next minute paradise? How is it that the deliciousness that of all the experiences that are coming into your experience that you allow and sojourn yourself into the place of knowing and being and participating? participating in, how do they seem to elude you? Isn't it interesting that you can bring yourself as a human creator into the place to notice what it is that you don't have? Well, how would you notice that you don't have something if you never noticed that you didn't have it? How would you notice? How would you come to the place of saying, oh, and I hope for so much more? If you don't know what more is, how do you hope for more than more is?
I said we live that one moment forever. Does that include transitioning, going to the Gulf and coming back?
And learning how to walk and riding a bike and going through puberty and going through the change of life and every dynamic and step. The first time you drive a car, the first time you fall and scratch your head, and the first time that you win a prize, or the first time you have ice cream, those are all as significant as what you call your transition. When you say it like that, all of a sudden transition isn't a big deal. Well, it's not. Can you choose to enjoy the ice cream now or later? Well, I think I'll enjoy it now. Okay, transition. Well, no, I think I'll save my ice cream till later. Okay, transition later. But who says you have to have ice cream ever at all and still know the deliciousness of this ice cream?
So
you do not have to transition unless you choose to.
And if you do, and you eventually make it to the Guff after going through the seven levels of heaven, if you do, you're still conscious?
You're always conscious, Bob. That's how you're conscious and your beingness not beingness right now.
So then you go into the Guff and you kind of disappear.
You don't disappear. You just go back to all of non-physical, which you all non-physical share now.
But you get into the Guff and you then somehow might get scooped up in a glass of water. Do you remember the life that you had?
No.
So there is a discontinuity there. You say it goes on forever. That's once you transition, you're in eternity. And that would be forever.
No, 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 no. Wait, slow down, slow down, slow down. The residue that is you, that always is. Shoe polish is shoe polish, correct?
Yeah.
Well, no, shoe polish is only shoe polish until you put it on your shoes. No, it's still shoe polish, whether it's on your shoes or not. So if you look at your non-physical like shoe polish, it's still shoe polish, always, whether it's on your shoes in a physical body or not. So shoe polish always is. Now, do you ever use shoe polish up? No, because there's always more shoe polish. Well, it's the same shoe polish. The shoe polish is the shoe polish is the shoe polish. So is your non-physical. That's how that works, and it is whether you have it on shoes or not. Your shoe polish either way. But if whether it's applied to shoes or not is what you're asking about. And we're saying that shoe polish whether or not it's on your shoes or not. Non-physical is non-physical whether it's in a human form or not.
If you, at this point, live forever, you do experience forever when you transition. When
you have already. Forever. You can't confuse forever with eternity. They're a little bit different. You can't confuse those.
What's the difference?
Something that's eternal always is. Forever has to gauge that there's a time that it's contained in. Eternity does not require an all-time experience. Eternity is. Forever means that ever has to come to pass to be forevered.
Forever involves time.
Yes. As ever is a descriptive adjective regarding an experience of time. Eternity is not. What is it, Michael Martin Murphy? What's the glory in living? What's forever for? It is a perfect song. Look that one up and listen to it. What's forever for? It's not about what's eternity for. Eternity is.
When you transition and go into the levels of heaven, you experience eternity.
No. You do not experience any more than you do right now.
Oh, you make your way towards the Guff, and you don't know when you get there. You don't know if you could get there.
You do know, you just don't care.
When you get there.
Yeah. It's sort of the way humans live their lives now. They're looking for heaven right here, right now, and they're there, and they don't know it. Well, that sucks, doesn't it? eternal bliss right here, right now. But no, we have to wait till we can figure out how to forever pine through the seven layers of heaven to get to the Gulf. It sounds almost as ambiguous as trying to find the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven.
Did you say ambiguous?
Yeah. They're doing the same thing here in their physical that they'd be trying to do in their non-physical from that place of waiting. They make the statement that someone is so heavenly bound that they're no earthly good. They're so excited about heaven that they're not functioning in their physicalness here. And here is as much of heaven as heaven is heaven. There is no difference in your physical non-physical and your non-physical non-physical. They are the same.
Well, I understand that when you go in the gospel, and then that's it. You're gone.
Gone where? Well, okay, you're born. Where are you? You're gone. You're gone from the Gulf. Well, that's gone. No, no, you're alive. Well, you're just as much alive in the Gulf as you are alive here. There's a lot more non-physical dead right here in these bodies roaming around, tweeting about their newest ditching party of what's wrong with Sylvia Brown today than there is ever in the contrastless experience that is non-physical. All that happens is you forfeit this place of contrast. And we're not pushing against that, but enough's enough. There is only non-physical. That spirit man is before, during, after, aboard, about, above, across, after, against, along, amid, among, and on and on and on and on and on with all those prepositions. And then the object of that preposition is the physical. Well, great, but you still are even without the physical. You talk about people that are stone cold dead, just like they're right here, right now.
I talk about them?
Sure. Dead relatives remembering, smelling things that were in your mother's kitchen, smelling things in the holiday season. Some people have a real hard time missing their loved ones, and then they'll bring out an ornament or bring out something or a smell, a gingerbread, a special Christmas cake. That's always great fun. Well, you're talking about fruitcake, but a special time that you enjoy a certain type of a food. That's just bringing back from that resonance of your non-physical that is those experiences that you've already experienced. You have a resonance with those. Who ate fruitcake for the first time to decide that it was good? If you've never tried that, how do you decide if that suits you or not? Or if you taste something that doesn't suit you, how do you come to that conclusion?
I want to go back to some points. I got a good memory.
Good. You do. You really do.
Does the word residue refer to what we call ghosts?
Can.
There can be other aspects. The residue stays here. It doesn't go into eternity.
See, that's the thing. Eternity's here.
So what's this residue?
Residue is the things that are here that are left over that you may not have noticed that still are here. What is residue? If you have an ink, you know, when they used to use quill and ink, the written ink on the page, that's residue of that ink. That ink is just as much ink on that paper as it is in that bottle. It's still ink. But the residue that's left over would be those words that are written on that paper. Indelibly. Still ink. Residue is what's left over out of that ink. And if you do that with the physical, non-physical, or what you call spirits or spirit world, that's the same thing. That they are. You are. They is. It's not past tense. They're not gone.
Where are they?
Here.
Where's here?
That's the question of the day. Where is here? You're non-physical. Where is here?
Okay, we got
you
that.
No, you don't.
Hold on, we got that. Now, the next part is, Ion says there's no reincarnation because you go into the guff, you kind of, that's it, the end of that life, and then when you get scooped up, or you don't even exist, but if you're part of the scooping, well, maybe you have to be part. You have to be part.
That's exactly correct.
You'd have to be the thing that had the previous life.
It's not about the life. It's the all of non-physical monkey syndrome doesn't work if all the monkeys aren't on the same non-physical realm. See, you're one.
I'm trying to figure out the statement that you will have a new life if you're scooped up in the glass.
Not a new life, it's a continuation of your eternal life.
So there is reincarnation then?
No, there's not.
If you remember your previous life and then you go in the gut.
There is no. You spend all day, every day, not even remembering your life right now. If you can't even remember your life right now, how are you going to remember past lives that you didn't remember?
Yeah, because people remember a little bit of their life. They know
they don't even remember a little bit.
They know they were here.
What did you eat for lunch yesterday?
Doesn't matter. They know that they went to school.
Don't remember.
They had a childhood. They know the general outline, so it's not totally oblivious. So the thing that gets scooped up in a glass is aware of its previous life, previous existence in the physical.
No, we're not. You won't catch us in the words because it's just in the transition of the words. What you're saying is exactly correct and appropriate. The only premise that you're adding that we just will not budge on is that your non-physical is, always has been, always will be.
It doesn't have any lives, physical lives.
Correct. That's good. And if you take that ink and put it on lots of different paper, does that make it different kinds of ink? No. It's the same ink. Even though it makes different words, do you remember every word the ink ever made? Well, no, not necessarily. And if you look at it that way, it takes all the guesswork out of it.
When you drop the physical,
you change the leaf on the page.
And you go into the guff, and then you're scooped up in a glass. The non-physical remembers that it had a previous life.
But no, it doesn't care. It doesn't care which page it's writing on.
If I transition and go into the guff and then continue, come back and have another life, and then transition and go in the guff and
same
then
same bottle of ink.
It's always the same life.
You have but one life, and that life is eternal.
It has many engagements in the physical.
Absolutely, even in its physical, even through your journey through.
What do you mean by that? It has many engagements in the physical. It just drops it. And
in your life right now, you're a radio host, you're a husband, you're a beach bob, you're many bobs, even in this physical life. No, those should be divided between individual lives.
No, I don't say that. That's part of this life, but the...
Well, so is your eternalness.
So
part of this life.
How come I can't remember previous aspects of my ongoing life?
You won't allow it. You can't remember what you had for lunch yesterday.
Well, I won't allow it due to conditions I put on myself or that were put in the culture.
The culture has nothing to do with you. The only culture is your culture. Remember, everybody's cultures are different.
And all cultures don't seem to remember their previous lives.
And they don't get along with themselves, let alone their culture.
So we come into the physical to engage in a part of our eternal life. To forget things, to mix it up.
You don't forget things, you choose to. All knowing isn't yours to know.
Why do we forget things?
You don't want to take responsibility for your own deity.
Why don't we want to take responsibility?
Because then you'd know, and anything less than would mean that you didn't know.
So we don't want to know.
You don't want to know. I think I know. No. When you know, then you don't think, you know. Well, as you come forth to create in the physical prowess of creation, of bringing forth new, fun, wonderful things, that's the jovial place of, I figured it out. You know what a jigsaw puzzle is? It should be just as much fun for the very first piece as it is finding the very last piece. But you typically don't remember finding the corners. You typically remember finding that last piece. It's just unknown. You can't find it. It's not in the box. They gave us a 1,000-piece puzzle, and we have 999 of them. That's what you remember is the one that you can't find, not the ones that came together seamlessly.
Do you have a clue why we do that?
For the fun of that process.
For the fun
of
it.
It's not a big deal. The fun of it.
Yeah, so I drop off my memory of my previous aspects of my life, my eternal life.
You drop off your aspects of your physical life.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, but yet, you can go back to your childhood and remember what kind of cake you had at a certain birthday when you were 7. rare. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, but it's rare that people can remember earlier aspects of their other lives.
No, it's much easier to remember that than it is what they had for lunch last Tuesday. Even if they eat the same thing every day.
Yeah.
Because chances are greater than not you had nut pate. But you don't remember that.
Well, I remember because I have it every day, so... I'm Groundhog Day.
So creation by default, then, right?
Yes, I'm Groundhog Day.
And see, if you get caught in that loop, guess what you do? You learn various and sundered different ways to enjoy nut pate because you know you're going to have it every day. You know it's going to be Sonny and Cher when the radio clicks on at 6 o'clock in the morning.
So we don't remember our previous aspects of our other physical lives.
Because they're only one.
So that we can enjoy it.
But there's only one.
So even memory is not that stable, is not really key.
If it was key, why would you have to remember it? If memory was what it was all about, why would a rememory be so significant?
A rememory is significant?
No, it's not. Otherwise, you'd make it important.
So memory is not that important either.
J.W. sees it as a curse. He's not fond of it at all. Mm. He remembers everything. And he doesn't necessarily even choose to. It's not comfortable for him. He's been here before.
He's been where? Here?
Wherever here is, he knows. He remembers. Conversations. Individual tit-tat little things.
Oh, he remembers his previous physical lives.
There's a gallon of milk in the refrigerator. He remembers exactly where that line is of the milk. So if the milk all goes away, he would remember that it's different. That will run you crazy, Bob. It will run you crazy.
He will remember what's different, that the milk
where
is
Where the line of the milk, the amount of liquid in the milk jug was from the last time he looked at the milk jug. In his recent journey, he remembered changes in the road signs. And it was from when they had the flooding and they had replaced them. Mm-hmm. He remembered that the two of the numbers were off. And it turned into a 15 or 20 minute conversation that no one else seemed to could remember. And they had to look it up and find out that it was because of the floods and they had replaced them. And it was a major works project that caused this debilitation from the flooding that was happening last year down south.
He remembered that the old sign was incorrect.
No, that the new sign was incorrect, that the old sign was correct.
Oh, okay.
You know, what does that matter? Nothing at all. But he remembered. And he remembers that's significant because he'd much rather just be in bliss and not knowing and not caring. The road didn't change. It went to the same place. He knew the road. He knew how far it was. He knew where it was. He knew how to get there. He didn't have to look at a map. He didn't have to turn on the little lady saying, turn right, turn right, turn right. He knew. He knew how to go. He knew. He remembered that journey. He knew which exit to take. He knew which road to take. He remembered. Even if they changed the roads, he would remember that. Somehow he'd still remember the way.
So humans keep their memory so they know not to live in someone else's house.
But they do.
No, generally they go back to their house.
How many houses have you been in your lifetime?
My house.
And which one else?
And the other my house.
And which other one else?
All the my houses. My house.
Well, okay. Well, there you go. You should be able to go back to City Island, to your house, and walk in because that's your house, correct?
Not anymore.
Oh, so how do you keep those straightened out? What would stop you from getting crossways on your walk to the beach and end up on City Island?
I use memory not to do that.
So you do have some tactility of memory. Guess what else you remember? You remember not to take a bobby pin and or tweezers and stick it into an electrical socket. You remember that?
Yeah.
Well, wow, what a marvelous...
So how come we remember that and not remember other things?
Exactly. That's the conundrum of this memory thing, this navigation part that you're able to do, but you give no relevance to it. You remembered not to eat cyanide this morning for breakfast.
Good.
Wow, that's great.
Well, that's why we tend to
people are creatures of habit because they can rely on what they do without exercising their memory too much.
So if they're used to taking strychnine every day, then they should remember to not forget their daily quota of strychnine?
Well, they probably do remember if they do take it because it's part of their habit.
Mm-hmm.
So habit is a way of reinforcing memory without working too hard on thinking what you have to remember.
Okay.
It's a lazy
period. Okay, we're okay with that. We're delighted with the conversation because that's play. See, play is what brings you to the new places that bring you back to your power. And we'll play, we will fight, we will yell and rant and rampage and just have great fun, great fun. As long as at the end of the conversation, we land with you coming into your power.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. That's what the story is about. That's why you even talk about Sylvia Brown. That's why you talk about Edgar Cayce. That's why you're still talking about Nostradamus. And you let Sylvia Brown be in the ground, stone cold dead for 400 or 500 years, and she becomes the high priestess of the Church of the Painful Truth. She knew it all. She spoke all those words, and how could she be right so often of the time? But you see, that's the whole fun of it. When there's painters, they paint. And then let them get stone cold dead, and then they become priceless works of art. We're confused. The only reason they become priceless works of art is because you can't get any more of them.
So you were saying that Sylvia Brown spent 400 or 500 years in the grave. She will become head of the Church of the Painful Truth. Is that what you were saying?
Very correct, yes. Absolutely. Her disciples would be fluid.
What's the significance of bringing up that point?
The point is that you spend the energy of time judging what you don't understand from a place that you don't remember, from a facility that you can't embrace. And then you're on the blogs. Then I'm going to blog about it. That I'm right more than Sylvia Brown. Well, now you're wrong. To make that decision puts you crossways of you. You better hope Sylvia Brown's right. You better hope Sylvia Brown has a gift. You better hope and bless Sylvia Brown for acknowledging and experiencing her gift. You better hope that you understand that others can do it. He can't run a 4-minute mile. There's nobody can run a 4-minute mile. That's just, why don't you get somebody that can run? If you've got all you got is somebody that can run a 4-minute mile, you're lost. You're less than. Guess what, Bob? If nobody acknowledged that they were able to run a 4-minute mile, you wouldn't be able to run a 4-minute mile.
Are we dependent on that?
Not dependent, but don't push against it.
Don't push against
embrace
what?
It. Anything. Sylvia Brown, running a 4-minute mile, your memory, your
life.
Oh,
I mean, don't push against anything that might make you think it's false.
Well, because it's not. False, there you go. What's true and what's false? Who will provide the grand design? What is yours and what is mine? It's all relative. Things that are true aren't. They're relative. It's true. The world is flat. No, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. Yes, it is. And science of the day, it'd kill you if you didn't acknowledge that the world was flat. Then they figured out it wasn't. Uh-oh. Should they now go back and kill those? See, this truth or dare business, it's just silly. It doesn't get you anywhere. Science said that all these drugs that are killing people were safe. Wait a minute. Easy. The Food and Drug Administration would not allow these drugs out into the marketplace if they were not deemed provable safe by medical science. Well, somebody's getting screwed, huh? We're having a different conversation now, but it's as logically and progressively the case. Why would they let you put asbestos shingles on your house and asbestos tiles and asbestos floors and asbestos to wrap your pipes if it was unsafe? They proved that it was safe. Now all of a sudden it's not. What happened? Were they liars then or are they liars now? Get the lawyers and start filling out the briefs and filing the suits because somebody's going to pay. Well, there you go. You can still live in a world full of it all day, every day, and do just perfectly fine. Full of what? Of asbestos. You can have asbestos muesli for breakfast every morning and do just fine. But John, if you listen to everybody that's telling you that you're going to get mesothelioma, it's over. It's over.
Yeah, someone recently wrote and complained about ions, talking about asbestos, said that people got ill from asbestos before it got announced it was bad.
Nope.
And they probably can't cite that, but you could.
Well, who died of mesothelioma before they announced that there was mesothelioma? Nobody, because it didn't exist. Who died of cancer before there was cancer?
Well, they found out that people were dying of cancer.
How did they find that out?
I don't know.
They just named it as that. Science couldn't tell what it was. Oh, it's a melanoma. Oops, it's a melanoma. Oh, it's a skin cancer. Oh. You see, it's all very relative. Good. This is great fun. This is fun.
You're just ranting off. You're not connecting with us.
Oh, sorry.
They'll say, the person who wrote in and complained about ions, ridiculous notions that asbestos doesn't hurt us.
Right.
And I know Ian said asbestos only started to hurt us when people told us it would hurt us.
Correct.
But people think that people died of asbestos before they were told it was bad. Now, they probably can't prove when that first incident happened, but Ian could prove when it first happened.
Certainly.
She would say that it didn't happen.
The first
person who died of asbestos died after it was announced to be bad.
We're not saying that anybody's died of asbestos. We're saying if anybody died, that was the fastest path to their joy. And they used that as their excuse to check out. Just like lead paint.
I tend to not agree with Ion on that, that people can have all kinds of different things and be affected by them, whether they know what it is or not. And then maybe when people began talking about asbestos and everyone just worried, oh, maybe I have that, and then they got it, but I don't see why they couldn't have gotten an asbestos overload before they knew about it.
We're just saying, how could that be bad when before that it wasn't? What changed? All of a sudden, asbestos was the place of choice. There was no better pipe insulator. Even they put it in tiles on the outside of their houses. Floor tiles, up until the war, was 100% asbestos because it wouldn't burn. It was durable. You could polish it. It was great.
And it got in people's lungs, and some people, it affected them negatively, as they say.
Maybe.
So maybe yes, maybe no, but maybe. But I don't understand when Ion makes such a blanket statement that there was no mesothelioma until people knew it was bad.
There was no mesothelioma until they said it was mesothelioma. There was no mesothelioma before they said there was mesothelioma.
Well, that's just a play on words.
Well, it's a big one because it...
They were dying of other just lung problems, and it was possibly caused by asbestos, and they just didn't know it until they did enough autopsies to say so.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess it's as good a way to go as any. If you're going to go, we're easy with the whole process. It doesn't have to be asbestos. It can be coming to a place where you come into your power, and then even if you get it, you don't have to croak of it. And you could live in a world full of asbestos and never have a problem with it. You could take all the drugs the FDA says is safe. It's killing everybody else. And it not bother you at all. Not a problem.
I just find when Ion makes a blanket statement that there's no mesothelioma, no one died of it, it's like a blanket statement that freaks everybody out, and then they don't get the point that actually, you know, you could have mesothelioma and live with it if you didn't believe what they say.
That's correct. Because if you believe that the drug that you're taking now is safe, just wait. It may kill you too. If you're going to pick your poison, asbestos is a great way to go. It's better than reading the inserts on your drugs that they're giving you so you can make it one more day. You see, it's just amazing the links that human creators will go to bring into and escape these realities, even cleaning things, those fluids that you use to clean with, they took these off the market because they were bad, and this one is organic, and this one is healthy. Well, some of that stuff that's organically safe and healthy is nasty. Then your dog won't even lick it. It's not good. Dogs will lick things that you don't even care to be around, and it doesn't bother them, but put them in the right organic pesticide, and they won't last long. So it's a soft process. It's got to be. Bob started the conversation, which is a much more fun, typical, topical subject, was dividing eternity from forever. Much better. Much better. Because the whole point of this at the end of the day, regardless of mesothelioma or not, the moral to the story that resonates with the non-physical and other human creators that they do get is that they came forth, and they always are, they always will be. And this spans that they live in these physical bodies are to cause contrast, to figure it out, to play, to engage, to get the head rush, to get the calming down, to make the heart race and dance with delight, and then maybe watch a sad movie and cry a little bit. And it, that whole gamut of emotions and reactions are reactionary to the point that reminds them that they have all knowing, all power, that they are a coronated deity. And if you get that, all this other crap doesn't matter. So it must be antimatter. Carolyn, you're exactly right. You spin this web of a rabbit hole and then wonder how you get non-physical to sojourn down this rabbit hole, and just for the shock therapy, which that's what it amounts to, that offend folks, and then they think about it a little bit and they go, wait a minute, they used to think that the world was flat. What changed their mind? How did they figure it out? What if they just said that the world is the world? We don't know if it's round or flat, and we don't care. Then all of a sudden you don't have to go through all that persecution of perjuring yourself, of making the stance of what's right and what's not. That's relative. And whether or not Angelina Jolie gets a divorce or not, or all that other kind of foolishness, it's kind of like, well, good, who cares? Hey, Elizabeth Taylor divorced and married the same people a couple of times. How does that count? See, so after a little bit, it's like, and that matters why? Well, it kind of doesn't. That's the soft part.
What is this asbestos point? Why do people believe that it's bad for them today?
Because they were told it was.
The ones that told them, what was their motive in telling them that?
They found out they were wrong about the earth being flat, so they decided that the world was round, so they had to change everybody's thinking regarding it.
They found out the earth was round 500 years ago or so, and they changed people's thinking about it. How does that then relate to asbestos?
They said asbestos was perfectly safe and fine. Then they changed their mind and decided it was going to kill everybody. Bad. It was good.
Yeah. What was their motive in determining it would kill everybody?
Just the meme of the moment.
What made the meme of the moment? Why did they start saying that?
Because some people were making a fortune on asbestos. The other people were mad about it. So they're like, this causes cancer. This is not good. Same thing happened with DuPont. They make a bug spray. Then they say they're polluting the river. Their discharge is discharging us. And on and on and on and on. Raid. You know, there you go. Well, this blame game, well, you're culpably responsible for these deaths. Well, you know, this fella died with this potion on the table, so that's what killed him. He didn't have any system, but that's what killed him, so now you have to pay.
He didn't have any system. It didn't kill him, but they said it did.
Because it was sitting on his table when he died. That's your weight loss drinks.
Did that happen? Some weight loss drinks got in trouble?
It did.
Back to this asbestos. Okay, so somebody was out to get the asbestos companies.
They tried and they did. There aren't any asbestos companies now.
Why were they mad at the asbestos company?
Because they were making too much money.
Why were they bothered by that?
Because they weren't.
they weren't making any money. So they said, okay, they could have taken on some other company, not just asbestos, just whoever was making money.
Hey, Bob, wait, let's make this easy.
We're not making it easy. We're going to stick on this point, figure out what's going on.
Okay, well, then let's get on to it. Why don't generic drugs hurt people? Because there's no money to get. It's only brand name drugs that cause problems that the FDA approves. Generics never cause a problem because there's no money in generic medicine. So therefore, you can take those and they're great.
So somebody went after cigarettes because
they were making too much money. That's correct.
Why did everybody agree to that?
Did everybody agree to that?
Not everybody. Why did it become a law that the people who were against this tobacco paid off people to vote that way?
We don't know what you're talking about. They voted on what?
The tobacco people got in trouble a couple of years ago. They made some
suits and that, and had to pay companies.
And somebody started that. How did they get legislatures to agree to the people who were against the tobacco companies?
The same way you get your legislatures to provide trillions of dollars of money that they don't have to bail out companies that aren't being prolifically responsible with their business and capitalist society to give them money that they give back that isn't fair.
We don't know how they pulled that off.
Well, then we don't know how they pulled that off.
You might know how they pulled it off. You can tell us. But
let's stay
with the tobacco companies. Who paid off who to get the legislation passed to bug the tobacco companies?
That was done through the lobbyists that were against the tobacco-rich states that were having windfall taxes because each state had its own tax on tobacco. We're talking about cigarettes.
Yes, everybody had the same access to that tax. Every state had that, right?
Yes. Well, the states that were the greatest producers of it, they exported it to the other states, and they charged a tax. Well, then it became a tax of a tax.
Okay, hold on. Yeah, so the tobacco companies made tobacco in certain states, and they taxed the shipment of tobacco to other places.
Yes, and then the RJ hit back to RJR Nabisco, okay? RJR Nabisco was the largest, so they're the ones that got nailed with this huge tax or lawsuit, and they taxed the people enjoying the tobacco. RJR Nabisco didn't pay the penalty. They just charged more for their product. So where a pack of cigarettes used to cost 30 cents, now it costs $5 or $6 or $10, or depending on where you are.
Okay, back to this. That's the answer.
You're saying that somebody paid the lobbyists for the anti-tobacco companies representing states who weren't making as much money from tobacco because they weren't making the tobacco.
Right.
The states that weren't making tobacco taxed tobacco cigarettes, but that was nowhere near the profits of the states that not only taxed cigarettes, they made taxes. They got money from the tobacco companies who got taxes, extra taxes.
And you want to even know even bigger than that? Now, the same government that outlawed tobacco pays subsidies to tobacco farmers so they won't grow tobacco.
And meanwhile, the tobacco companies made a lot of money because they raised the price.
Exactly. And so less people are smoking, but the tobacco company doesn't mind because if everybody was smoking at 30 cents a pack, it's not as good as when a few people are smoking at $10 a pack. They have to make less cigarettes and get paid more money. Go figure.
We know why somebody was mad at the states who had the tobacco companies. And they lied to nail the tobacco companies, and they won. Did they bribe legislators to go with their desire of taxing the tobacco companies?
Well, someone provided the grand design that undid this place of knowingness. And what they actually had to do was convince the consumers of the tobacco that it was bad for them.
So the tobacco companies created the lobbyists who went against
And now they're finding it's more dangerous than asbestos was.
Is anybody lobbying against that?
No, because
nobody's figured out how to make money from it yet.
That's like the generics and the brand names. Perfect. Very good.
So I mean by that that not deals been made between the asbestos companies. The asbestos companies should lobby for knocking out the new companies so people can go back to asbestos.
They've already established that asbestos is bad, so good luck with that.
The tobacco companies won, but the asbestos companies didn't win.
That's correct. Very good.
The people were told that asbestos is bad.
And those that believed it had a 99% chance of having mesothelioma.
Those that believed it. So the anti-smoking...
The anti-smoking thing had to go on for a long time so people would start to, over 20 years, municipalities would create laws about smoking zones. All this would create a phobia about smoking. And then they finally nailed the tobacco companies. And you would agree with me that the tobacco companies were in on it?
Sure.
Were in on the legislation against them?
Sure. But now there are still states in the union that you can smoke in restaurants. Now...
They didn't go along with the legislation.
Right. Go to North Carolina. You can smoke anywhere. You smoke in church in North Carolina. I mean, you literally, it will shock you. You go to a restaurant in North Carolina, and you walk up to the little maitre d' that's going to seat you, and they go, hello, how are you? Fine, thank you. Would you like smoking or non-smoking? And everybody looks at each other like, what? What? What do you mean smoking or non-smoking? Would you like to be in the smoking section or the non-smoking section? You mean there's a choice? Well, of course there's a choice. So not everybody made that law.
Asbestos will harm those that believe it.
Anything can harm you if you believe it.
So when people disagree, they say, Ion's a little flaky here, saying asbestos does not hurt people. First of all, Ion has to be allowed to qualify that. It only hurts those who believe it, and they have to realize Ion said that.
Or not. It doesn't make any difference this time. It doesn't bother non-physical because we don't even have a dog in the fight. No, we're easy. You can please yourself. But here's what you won't get us to do. You won't get us to change our words to suit your mean. The next thing you know, you'll have non-physical railing. They were wrong. They were wrong from the beginning. The earth really is flat.
Who'd be railing that?
The human creators, if you could twist non-physical around,
yeah,
get you into these statements or these rabbit holes, it wouldn't be long before you'd have non-physical announcing. They know, the human creators, you were wrong, you were wrong. The world really is flat. Science was right. Science proved it. Science is all there is. Well, science is what's got you backwards in your whole process of thinking now. That's what causes this rabbit hole of conversation that we find just trite and silly, because it's only based on what your science says it is. Well, they'll turn on you, Bob. Just when they get it all figured out, then they change their mind. Whoops, sorry, never mind.
He's arguing over whether asbestos is bad or not is the collective expression of the personal mind looking for a reason.
Yeah. Otherwise, you'd run out of things to transition over. And guess what? That's what we're trying to get you to acknowledge, that you don't have to transition, that you can enjoy and bring it all into your experience, and nothing can befall you. When you become a god, what can hurt a god? Just straighten this out. What can hurt a god?
If a god is defined as something that's...
No. We're not defining God. You don't even know what God is, so you can't define God.
Yeah, so I can't answer the question. I don't know what a god is.
You are a god.
Okay, you said, what can hurt a god? I don't know.
Nothing. No thing can hurt a god.
That's the definition we're going with.
The only thing that can hurt a god is disbelief. Not acknowledging your godship.
Or a god itself would be hurt if people didn't believe in it.
Exactly. So, if you have the larger conversation that you are indeed created in the image of the Creator, which you are, which then puts you in the hot seat of Godship, the heirs and joint heirs with Christ, that's what your book says. Well, if you believe your book, then why couldn't you be? Why into your power, into your non-physical, that opens up your spiritual gifts, that allows you to understand that you indeed are a deity, then it works. Then your scriptures work. Then they apply. But if you get anywhere crossways of that, then you're less than. Then it doesn't work. Then God is the awful man who has the corral of the four horsemen going to come and destroy you. Wait a minute. What kind of God does that? Oh, well, it's to get rid of those sinners. Well, God loves everybody.
God doesn't care.
God doesn't care. God doesn't care what kind of car you drive. So for you to make the statement that you are less than because you drive a fancy car, God doesn't get involved in that, nor should you, because you're God. That's what we started off the hour with, trying to understand. See things the way you are, God. See things the way you are, comma, God. Now all your false premises have gone away. Now all your vain, silly questions go away. Now all this typical, tapical, topical, typical, centrifugally balanced questions that you can't seem to remember the question nor the answer, all of a sudden don't include or become preclusive of your dynamic of being a marvelous creator. Why can't you come into your power? Well, even if you can't remember, why can't you? You do things by default and then say that's reality. That's not reality. That's just what you're dumbed it down to allow. But I'm not really worthy. I don't really deserve it. The only good things that ever happened to me happened by accident. Wow, okay. I haven't created anything. There's nothing in my experience. I don't even know how to work electricity. I don't even know how electricity works. They tell me to plug it in my little box, and it works when I plug it in. But I don't understand the dynamic. I don't remember why I wanted it in the first place. I pay a bill regarding it for what I use, but I don't know how much I use. I don't know. I have these meat boxes that keep things cold, and I don't know how they work, but I buy them, and they make ice, really chunky water, come out of the door, and it's really great. I don't understand that either. How can it be warm outside and have ice in the box? You never put ice in it. It just keeps coming out. It keeps coming out. It keeps coming out. Where does the ice come from? Oh, be careful. There might be asbestos there. It'll give you mesothelioma. I'm sure that there's an insulation particle in there that might be bad for you. Oh, better find out. Better see how many have died. Okay, here, we figured it out. Here it is. Refrigerators cause death. Because most everybody who passed away in the United States of America this year had a refrigerator in their house. So, goddammit, that's what caused the problem. This refrigerators and indoor plumbing. That's what did it. Because the people that died have indoor plumbing. Homeless people don't die of that. They don't have refrigerators around them. Oh, but they go around convenience stores that have that. And all this money they collect on the street to go buy alcohol, that alcohol mostly is refrigerated, so they're getting exposed. They're getting exposed, too. So but we would be just as valid as the news press coming out to say refrigerators cause refrigeratolosis. Now, you're laughing, but you want to know about asbestos.
Yeah.
You want to know about that. Well, let's talk about the refrigeration. It's that refrigerated air. Refrigerated air. That's what it is. It's refrigerated air. It's killing you. It'll cause problems. It shuts down your body's natural resistance to the rhinovirus. And, oh, and you have to run a fever in refrigerated air. Oh, you got to stay out of the gamma radiation. See, it just goes on and 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 on. And we're like, congratulations.
I'll take it further. You know what causes death is speech.
Pretty much. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that validates. Now, when you say it, it's okay. But when we say that there was no mesothelioma before there was mesothelioma, you go, how dare you make such a statement? That's just not. But when you say it, it's perfectly okay. But when we're rallying the troops.
Wait a minute now. So this, whatever that word is, mesothelioma.
Mesothelioma.
Mesothelioma. That existed before people named it.
It did not exist before they named it.
So you know on the record, no one died of asbestos before the naming of mesothelioma.
No, no one died of mesothelioma until they named it mesothelioma.
What were they dying of before?
Suicide. And it's still suicide.
So the speech, people like to talk, they spread linguistic viruses.
You mean plagues?
Yeah, language is a virus, I think Burroughs said, William Burroughs, so you would agree with that.
It's a cancer. There was never a cancer growing on the presidency until Watergate.
I wish I could do a speech.
That speech caused cancer, caused the carcinogens in the presidency.
Their secrets.
Used to, people honored the presidency. You didn't have the stuff in history that you have now. You didn't question the chief executive officer of the country before that. My stars.
That's because current money, currency is not connected to nation states anymore.
Oh, we knew there was a reason.
Yeah, they respect the corporate meetings, the G8 meetings, the G7.
G20.
Yeah, those are countries, but they probably respect the IMF more than anything.
Nah, not so much.
Well, they respect something about business. Well, they did after recently.
Until there isn't any. Cash was king until there wasn't any, and then there was no king. That's what you are now. You have no king. You have a throne, but you don't have a king. Very good. So you may have to come into the place and be the king. That's what we're talking about. That's the coronation. That's the ascended man. That's the place where your non-physical can help you through this thing called life. It can help you enjoy the delicious and marvelous wonderfulness that is the deliciousness that is your world. How fabulous, how fabulous. And we're tickled to death and just singing the praises of the king. With the rocks are going to cry out. You've got to come into your power. You've got to come into your knowing and get over all this crap that you make up to stumble yourself out of yourself.
So you would recommend people not voting in their municipal, state, or federal elections?
You vote all day, every day. I vote that mesothelioma is going to come into my world, and so it does.
Right, right. So you say disengage with a lot of the activities that speech generates.
Yeah. Go over and go downstairs, Bob, and rub that silver meat box. Rub it with your hand. And thank yourself for allowing that meat box to be in your experience. Appreciate all that is in that meat box. Oh, thank you, meat box, for keeping my food cold. Oh, thank you, meat box, for not making me go to the market every single day to get my food because it would spoil. Oh, thank you, meat box, for keeping things safe and nice for me. And if they announce that the meat boxes cause cancer, say, oh, thank you, meat box, that you provided me with a little bit of contrast. And if I have to choose to leave my physicalness, I just soon go with you as anybody. Matter of fact, when you were stone cold dead and croaked, just put me in the meat box. It preserves me just great.
So how is our audience reacting to this?
They're just laughing because it sounds so silly when we say it that way that it starts to make logical sense.
They're not laughing at what Ion's saying. They're laughing at the last bit about the refrigerator.
Well, they're laughing about the understanding that they go, my God, exactly. The silliness that we're speaking about makes as much sense as anything else that you use to validate or vindicate your cause of the moment. Next thing you know, hummingbirds are going to cause cancer. Hummingbirds, they have a rhinovirus. And they go around and they suck the life out of these flowers. And they get this poison in their bodies. And then they run around. Did you know that that same little tip of that hummingbird's tongue goes in every one of them flowers? Spreading that disease and that cancerous disease everywhere. They about blamed that on mosquitoes with the West Nile virus, didn't they?